Okay, welcome back. Here we go. Hour number three, just gathering notes together and stories together. News is up now. Headlines in the coronavirus section. Henry's going to love this one. Should I save this for last? Yeah, let me save this for last. All right. This is another one. Judge rules coronavirus directives by Democratic Pennsylvania governor are crazy. Oh, and crazy health director are unconstitutional. So a judge doesn't like what the Democratic Pennsylvania governor and what is said as the crazy health director gave out as directives are unconstitutional. There's one from Pennsylvania. Denmark and Norway's coronavirus infection rates surpass that of no lockdown Sweden. There's another one for you. Political leaders failed to heed warnings over the pandemic, says the World Bank and the World Health Organization. Well, I think that's kind of a given. Dr. Fauci said, I have to disagree with President Trump on the coronavirus rounding the corner statement. He doesn't think it's rounding the corner either. Okay. This is interesting. New research shows Google searches for coronavirus stomach symptoms may predict outbreaks. So they're tracking, of course, as they track everything, searches on Google regarding anything to do with coronavirus. And a lot of people are apparently searching for stomach or digestive problem issues, thinking they may be showing those signs as being infected. Okay. Hold on. Months and months after coronavirus infection, about 75% report breathing difficulty and continuing fatigue. Interesting. All right, let's jump back up to the first one here that I saved. University of Pittsburgh. Henry lives in Pittsburgh. University of Pittsburgh scientists discover antibody that neutralizes the virus that causes coronavirus cases. That's what the story says from Fox. We'll get the full details now from Dr. Henry himself. Welcome back. How are you?
Well, it's good to be back, although most of the stories that are of greatest interest are not science stories. They're kind of anti-science stories.
But, those are the stories that are pretty much dominating the news, what they call the news.
Right,
You're right. You're right.
I'll do the science one and then devolve into the anti-science.
Don't devolve too far. Go ahead. All right.
Well, no, it is falling precipitously. What I'm going to talk about basically happened over the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And it's it went from doing reviews and trying to block publications of COVID articles and by the CDC and MMWR to shadows on the wall.
To what? Sorry, what, Henry? What on the wall?
Shadows.
That's what I thought you said. Okay.
Yeah, sadly, that is the story, and it's another of Trump and Roger Stone's associates, Michael Caputo. But anyway, getting back to the science, we'll get into the anti, non, and psychological sciences in a little bit, but it's it is very concerning, all aspects of that story. But as far as the good news side, the story out of University of Pittsburgh has to do with somewhat akin to finding a neutralizing antibody. but mm-hmm. it's a little bit different than some of the earlier stories that found neutralizing antibodies using monoclonal antibody technology. In this case, it was screening a library of human antibodies, or portions of human antibodies, actually, for mm-hmm. the ability to bind to the spike protein receptor binding domain. And researchers at the University of Pittsburgh screened this very large library and identified a variable portion of an antibody gene that did bind to the receptor binding domain and did reduce the infectivity of the virus. And so it's a little bit different in that they're just using a portion of the antibody molecule, and they're kind of taking the variable portion and fusing it onto a small constant portion and creating this little kind of a baby antibody, a little antibody that has been able to neutralize the SARS coronavirus. And
when you say neutralize it, Henry, is that to mean destruction, destroy it, or just stop it?
No,
for the moment,
it kind of blocks it. It blocks okay. it. It's an antibody. So antibody right. basically binds to the receptor binding domain and gets in mm-hmm. the way of it binding to the receptor. So it basically, when it neutralizes, it means that if they take the virus and mix it with the antibody and then see how much virus can infect the cell, they see sometimes it's blocked. There's enough antibody, it blocks it so that they don't see any infection at lower levels of antibody. It reduces the rate of infection. So basically the assay is to show that less virus gets into the cell, and it's to mix it with this fragment that they've identified. I think they call it AB8. I think AB for antibody, and 8 is probably the 8th one they tried or something, or it's the 8th one that they isolated, and that's the one that gave the best results. So that was in the news today. So it's somewhat similar to the other monoclonal antibodies that neutralize the virus. There's been several reports of individual antibodies or cocktails of antibodies. This just uses the variable portion. So they've kind of constructed a small version with the possibility that it could be, I think, diffused through a patch or something. It can be administered without actually having to do an IV injection or an injection of any type. So the idea is it's easier to administer, and it would do the same thing as the big monoclonal antibodies as far as the neutralization is concerned. It's still not clear that a single monoclonal will be effective, or a single antibody will be effective. It is very possible that a cocktail is going to be necessary. But this report was about, it's a report in the journal Cell, and it's, just came out in the last few days or so.
They did a good job. You like it?
Well, it's a start. Like I said, I'm not sure that one is going to work that effectively because the virus mm-hmm. has a way of mutating around it. And they targeted the receptor binding domain, and that is required, so it might be harder for the virus to mutate around it. And the quantification of it, all this is done in vitro. So how well this works in animals or in humans, is there any you know, what its half-life is once it goes into the body, and all those things, I think, need to be worked out. So this was kind of an initial result. So it's one of these in vitro things that works well in a test tube, and, you know, then they would go into animal studies, and they were going to humans and look at pharmacokinetics and those types of, and resistance and those types of things. So it is a start. It was in the news today. It is in the journal Cell, which is a pretty respected journal. And that's the good news.
All right. So we can all go home now. All right. Good night, Henry. Thank you for the good news.
There's a lot on the bad news side, and it isn't just a little bit bad. It's
well, Austria's
bad.
Cases are skyrocketing. They're calling it a second wave now in Austria. That's one.
Well, I don't know what the numbers are. I know that a lot of the numbers that were cited earlier were from a very low number to a significant percentage, but still wasn't anything near what's in the United States. I mean, it was people that, you know, numbers that went from 20 to 30, you know, so it was a rise, 50% rise, but it was only 10 people. And I don't know what Austria's numbers are, but a second wave would not be a surprise. And in Europe, any of these second waves would be starting from a very low number. So percentage-wise, it can get to a high percentage increase fairly easily with just a few significant outbreaks. And how well that'll spread, and whether it's a second wave, usually you'll have some differences in properties, unless it's just an increased viral load, because a lot of people have it in the area, and you end up getting infected, you know, multiple times potentially. Mm-hmm. And those are a couple different components that can go into a second wave. Usually a second wave is going to be a little bit different, and so your immune response to the virus in the first wave doesn't really work as well in the second wave, and everybody's susceptible. And therefore, the antibodies you develop in the spring don't necessarily work that well in the fall, and you end up with a big wave.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. A wave in the U.S. has got the potential to be much worse than Europe, because the U.S. is sitting around 40,000 cases a day, at least during the week. And therefore, if, you know, a percentage increase of 40,000 cases soon would be at a level that's never been seen before anywhere in the world. I mean, if it doubled from 40,000 to 80,000, nobody's reported 80,000 cases a day for more than a day or two. So, and the U.S. has been sitting at 40,000 cases a day. Well, it went down to about 30, and now it's getting back to 40 or so. So, if it got up to 80,000 cases in a day, that would be more than anybody's reported. That would be simply doubling what the U.S. has right now. So the U.S. is much more vulnerable to get into a situation that's totally out of control, as opposed to Europe, where they've got low numbers, and even if the numbers are starting to take off, they at least are small enough numbers that they can kind of see if they can get those people quarantined and shut off the transmission routes. But speaking of COVID in science, there was a report that started coming out on Friday about reports in the MMWR. And, you know, as your listeners probably know, the MMWR is a CDC publication. It's
got a wonderful title. Tell them what the title is. Wonderful title.
It's morbidity and mortality we can report.
Isn't that nice?
So it's people that get sick and die, and they tell you what's new every week. You get an update. And because it's a weekly report, and it's put out by the CDC, and it, in the past has been based on science, that physicians read it, people in public health read it very regularly. It's usually a free subscription, so anybody can afford it. You can read it online. You can get a hard copy in the mail, and comes out a day earlier if you do it online. It comes out on Friday, but you can read it on Thursday. And the CDC relies upon it enough to give updates. And since we're in the middle of a pandemic, they usually have multiple different reports on COVID. Frequently it'll be population studies. It'll say who's at risk and what kind of frequencies do they have, or there's a new types of symptoms. They'll put that out. If it's kind of breaking news, they'll do an early release MMWR. They won't even wait until Thursday evening or afternoon publication. They'll actually put it out in the middle of the week, or even a week ahead of time, and it'll be listed as an early release because it's of critical importance. So I'm not sure exactly how long MMWR has been around, but it's decades for sure. And that's kind of a communication device the CDC uses to keep clinicians and public health people up to date on what the latest is. And like I said, it's got a lot of reports on COVID. And apparently, in April, Trump brought in a new person by the name of Michael Caputo. Michael Caputo is a longtime associate of Roger Stone. He's been involved in a lot of weird Russian connections with Paul Manafort and guys from Russia that have these exotic stories, and some of which are actually known Russian agents. And Michael Caputo seems to have gotten involved with those in multiple instances in the past. But in April, actually, I think I covered this on one of the updates at the time. And this
you did.
Was really...
You did, but nobody remembers. You did. I do.
Yeah, but this is a reminder that... This happened on April 9th, and on April 9th, the CDC put out a media statement for immediate release, and the title was "Announced today the extension of a no sail order for all cruise ships," and the CDC puts out statements all the time.
That's not no sale as in no ticket sales for passengers. It means no sailing as in leaving port.
Correct. Correct. And the third paragraph of this releases, just to give your readers a little background. I mean, when the CDC puts out these types of immediate release media statements, they usually give a little bit of background, and then they're pretty specific. I mean, scientists are big on being concise and exact and being somewhat data driven, and they usually get right to the point and give out the critical information. And the third paragraph of this, and frankly, I mean, the paragraphs are short. The first paragraph's only one line, and it just says the CDC Centers for Disease Control and Prevention announced today the extension of a no-sail order for all cruise ships. And the first paragraph of substance says, we are working with the cruise line industry to address the health and safety of crew at sea, as well as communities surrounding U.S. cruise ships' points of entry, said CDC Director Robert Redfield. The measures we are taking today to stop the spread of COVID are necessary to protect Americans, and will continue to provide critical public health guidance to the industry to limit the impacts of COVID-19 on its workforce throughout the remainder of this pandemic. So that first, you know, statement is kind of normal. Okay, so that's kind of what you would expect in one of these press releases. The okay. next paragraph is something that I've never seen before in a CDC press release. And it said, the no-sail order reinforces the strong action by President Donald J. Trump and the White House Coronavirus Task Force to combat the spread of COVID-19 in the United States.
President What was the Trump, date on this again? What was the date?
This is April 9th.
April. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
President Trump acted early and decisively to implement travel restrictions on foreign nationals who had recently been to China and Europe. And by issuing the 30 days to slow the spread guideline, these containment and mitigation strategies have been a critical component of the United States COVID-19 response. But despite these efforts, cruise ships travel markedly, ship travel markedly increases the risk and impact of the COVID-19 outbreak within the United States.
Right.
And then it goes on and gives how many cruise ships and how many people and where they were and da 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 da. But I've never seen a politician's name in any CDC press release. And I've never seen the type of acted early and decisively da 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 da. And anything
It was a re-election pamphlet. It wasn't a press release. It was a re-election pamphlet.
It's got red writing, and it says, media statement in red, for immediate release, Thursday, April 19th, 2020. Contact CDC Media Relations, 404-639-3286. So it was an official CDC press release that had a very unofficial paragraph. And frankly, when I saw that paragraph, I posted it and put it under the headline of The Beginning of the End. Now, I didn't really know about Michael Caputo at the time, but this was April 9th, and Michael Caputo joined as the CDC's media, or not even media, like an official spokesperson in April. So it was probably right around this time, you know, that he joined this. And Michael Caputo, like I said, he's a political operative. That's being very kind. And, of course, has no scientific background, knows nothing about viruses, knows nothing about epidemiology.
Well, that qualifies him perfectly to be a political hack.
Right. For he's the spokesperson for Health and Human Services.
Perfect.
And then he hired somebody with a science background by the name of Paul Alexander. who is an assistant professor part-time at McMaster University in Canada. And he put him in charge of reviewing anything that was going to be published in MMWR related to COVID.
Really?
Why would he do that? In Michael Caputo's words, because of the deep state that has infiltrated the CDC.
Absolutely.
So, right.
Yes.
And so he's got this assistant part-time professor from Canada.
I got it.
To come in and oversee the entire U.S. CDC, which is considered the premier epidemiological organization in the world.
Used to be.
And, yeah, exactly. And he was in charge of this. And Michael Caputo was concerned that some of the articles that were coming out in the MMWRs were not in line with President Trump's optimistic projections on how the pandemic was going to go. This is in April. You know, April has already hit New York. You know, they've already got all red lights flashing, and you know, Trump said it's going to go away in April, actually. And, you know, it's not going to be a problem. And we got things under control. And And the CDC's putting out these updates saying that there's some serious issues. And you have to realize that the CDC puts out scientific reports that are based on data that's generated in the CDC. It's done by scientists who are you know, career scientists. They have no political affiliation. They serve under whoever's been elected, and they do science, and they do public health, and they do infectious diseases, which frequently cause morbidity and mortality, especially when it's at the pandemic level. And so Michael Caputo was concerned about some of the reports that seemed to be not as optimistic as President Trump was back in April, when he thought everything was under control and it was going to go away. And they threatened to stop publication of the MMWR. and they put a halt to anything that was going to be published, and nothing could be published without going through review by the part-time assistant professor from Canada.
Part-time assistant. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Paul
Sounds like
Alexander.
A soap opera. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, you think that's a soap opera? This was Friday. It's already Monday. You don't know what's happened in the last 2 days.
Oh.
This is the opening act. Okay. And soap operas usually go very, very slowly in 3 days.
Usually. Right.
You look at a soap opera 3 days later, and
It
looked on the first day. Right. So this was on Friday. This is a report out of Politico. And they had put a hold that they were concerned about their report on. What do you think they would be concerned about a report on? Let's pick a drug. What drug would they be concerned about MMWR coming out with an update on?
Probably the AstraZeneca. No, you're talking about a drug, antiviral drug.
Yeah, right. That's way too scientific.
Okay. All right.
Hydroxychloroquine.
You're back on hydroxychloroquine. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is back in April. Well, it started
April. Oh, that's right. I was out of context.
And the CDC was doing an evaluation of hydroxychloroquine, and they didn't like the evaluation. And it ended up delaying it for, I think, several weeks. And then the report finally came out and said that the benefits did not weigh the risks. They recommended no longer using it for treatment of COVID. So they didn't like that report. They ended up delaying that report. And then they didn't like the report on how susceptible children were. So I mean, this isn't because they've got some data. This guy in Canada wasn't doing any research. He was just reading what they had written. And basically they're coming up and putting delaying and asking for, you know, editing of these articles so that they are more in line with Dr. Trump. I mean, it is so absurd. So, yeah, I said that Trump was anti-science. Well, Trump is actually waging war on science. He's basically cherry-picking a little bit of data and saying everything else is essentially fake news, if you will. And and he's got this guy out of Canada who's a part-time assistant professor who's holds all the levers of power as far as the CDC and science. And hold it isn't just the CDC. It's the CDC, it's the NIH, and it's the FDA. So, I mean, like I said, this guy's the spokesperson for Health and Human Services, which is above all three of those organizations. They're all under HHS. So, there were a few other things, but the idea that A, they were threatened to stop the publication of a publication that, I mean, it's WR stands for Weekly Report. It comes out every week. It's been coming out every week for probably 50 years. And all of a sudden, because they got some hack in there from, well, here's more about Michael Caputo. Caputo.
More than we need to know,
about,
I'm sure.
Forget about his past. Let's talk about what he's done since Friday. Because it's already Monday, right?
You had a great weekend, I can tell. All right.
Yeah. This story just kept on going and kept on going, and so he ended up. First, he came out with, you know, the CDC deep state, and that's the reason they had to bring in this guy from Canada, and they had to run roughshod over the. The organization, and but then he came out with another warning, and the warning he came out over the weekend was that Trump was probably going to win, but Biden wouldn't concede defeat. And that there were, in the CDC, there were these groups of, that were plotting to, armed insurrection, after the election.
Uh-huh.
And that, Michael Caputo told, people to, go out and buy ammunition because it was likely to be in short supply and they need to get ammunition so they can basically be prepared for an armed insurrection because Biden wouldn't concede. And then he started talking about how afraid he was and that he was, you know, always looking over his shoulders and he thinks that he's being targeted. And he's worried about these shadows that he sees on the walls in his apartment.
That's enough to scare me right there. I don't want to hear anymore.
Right. Well, that's about it. It's Monday. There might be more this week, but that's where things went from Friday to Monday. It went from being in charge of the scientific community with regard to COVID.
We're going to have to come up with a use for
NIH.
Shadows on
and
the
then
wall.
And then it's arms direct. Insurrection, and now he's looking over his shoulder because he thinks he's a target, and he sees these shadows on the wall in his apartment.
Damn!
And they have him. They're inside. They're
I'm going to turn
inside
some more lights
apartment.
On here. I don't want to
shadows inside
on
his
wall.
Apartment, and he is concerned, and. That's who's in charge of U.S. science COVID reports now.
Oh, my. All right. Well, I'm keeping the lights on, Henry.
Speaking,
I'm sorry.
Speaking of light, President Trump went to California today.
Yes.
He's worried that they don't have enough rakes there because they got these, you know, historic forest fires that are throughout California. And I guess there are bad practices in California as far as not raking enough, must have spread to Oregon and Washington. So the whole West Coast is under fire, on fire, I should say, and because they haven't really been doing enough raking. So they had a meeting with different representatives from California, and Donald Trump was there, arms folded, sitting at the table, listening to them saying, "Well, yeah, it's good we had this meeting, and we agreed that, you know, we got to work a little bit more on managing the forest, but, you know, 3% of the area belongs to California, and 50% of the area belongs to the United States government. It's government land, and so it's appropriate that the government should send funds to help control these forest fires that are out of control, and the police are getting all these calls as Antifa deliberately setting fires, which were false, but they tied up 911 and they asked people to please stop calling. And these fires are not in any one location. It's throughout California, Oregon, and Washington State. And they had 4 days of 60-mile-an-hour winds. Record high temperatures. It was 130 in Death Valley. It was 120 in LA. Or
121.
LA Valley, I guess. 121, correct. And I was just rounding.
Yeah, we got some videos. I'll send you some videos. There's one video showing an arsonist, whoever he is, lighting a fire. And then there's another one. A woman got out of her car and pulled a gun and got the guy on the ground, and the cops came. He had matches with him, but no cigarettes, and he's been arrested for arson. Some of these fires are arson fires. They always are when you have a lot of fires.
Yeah, right.
It's just a fact.
Right.
I have the Italian data.
That's what happens,
but
most of them are lightning strikes.
We haven't had any lightning in Oregon at all. California, yes. That's where a lot of their fires originally started. We have had zero lightning storms in Oregon. That's the interesting part. The wind, which you described, began last Tuesday about 2 a.m.
It was like 60 miles an hour for four days,
No, it was more than that here. It was up to 80 or 90 where I am. and it blew all through the valley. If you go look at the top of my homepage, you'll see that night. This is the next night. It started about 2 a.m. The fires began in the morning around 10. They burned the day through, and then into the night they burned, and it got crazy because the winds came up again in the afternoon. And I have on my homepage, at the top of the homepage, click and you can watch the night live camera scene from a 10-story building trained over the town of Phoenix and Talent. And you can watch, it looks like a blowtorch going right through the town, up the main street. It was horrible. Over 1,000 homes lost, several hundred businesses, a couple hundred businesses at least. The smoke is so thick here and toxic because a lot of things that burned had chemicals in them. And it's in the air. And they're telling people, do not go outside. It's that bad. So anyway, I was right here. It was a couple miles from my house. Fortunately, it burned west. But you might want to look at that video. It's quite remarkable. It's at the top of the homepage. It's all night, and it's going right through a city. It's not nighttime footage of a hillside burning. These are buildings.
The city going.
Houses.
Right, right.
Apartment buildings.
Right. That's
blocks.
What they were saying. They're preparing for mass casualties when they finally get in.
There may be 50 people dead in the ashes of their homes who didn't leave, who didn't want to leave. The homes are burned to the ground, so they're going to have to sift through the ashes.
Right.
That's why it's going to take time.
Yeah, I hear there's dozens that are missing.
I'm all over this fire thing down here. Here's Austria. From Friday to Saturday, one day, Austria, a nation of 9 million, reported 869 new cases, more than half of those in the capital. Misspelled again. No one can spell capital anymore. Vienna. So we are experiencing the beginning of the second wave, said Chancellor Sebastian Kurz in a statement, appealing to the population to stick to antiviral measures and reduce social contact. He warned that the mark of 1,000 cases per day would be reached, in his opinion, very soon. Meanwhile, France reported 10,000 new infections on Sunday, close to the level of the peak of the first wave in April. So the point here is that they're beginning to call it, they already have called it, a second wave. Austria has so far been able to avoid the brunt of the health crisis. Today, coronavirus infections currently stand at more than 33,000, with about 750 deaths to date. Meanwhile, the Czech Republic is reporting its largest single-day increase with 1,500-plus cases. All right, it was the fifth day in a row, new cases over 1,000 in Czechoslovakia, or the Czech Republic. Go ahead.
But those numbers to date, 750 dead and 30,000 cases, is less than what the U.S. does every day.
We're number one. Don't forget. We're number one.
Right, right. But,
absolutely.
But by a very large margin. And that's
not
why I said 800 cases, 800 cases in a day is, the states I send you, which can be 10 or 15 in a day, all of those have at least 1,000 cases. Those are the only ones I'm sending. Are the ones that have 1,000 or more. So they're 1,000 apiece. And for a while there, in Florida and Texas, they were getting between 10 and 15,000 cases a day. I mean, it's actually down a little bit. And that's why it's down to the 35 to 40,000 a day instead of 60,000, because there were, when it was peaking in the three states, California, Florida, and Texas, those three states alone were accounting for over 30,000 cases per day. And so those have calmed down, and they're more like 3,000 or 4,000 cases per day. But that's per state. So combined, they're still generating about 10,000 cases a day, which are, more than these various countries are. But and that's why I'm saying that these countries are starting from a low number. So when they have 800 cases, that's a dramatic increase
for them.
And we're we're starting from 40,000. So like I say, if it just doubles from 40,000 to 80,000, that'll be the that'll be an all-time high for the U.S. I think it'll be an all-time high for the world, that 80,000, especially if it goes for more than one day. So if it goes from 40,000 a day to 80,000 a day, that would be the highest ever recorded in the entire outbreak. So that's why the U.S. is at a greater danger. And it's kind of started the universities with the kids going back to school, because they keep showing pictures of that. And of course,
what are the latest reports on influenza? Any yet?
No, influenza usually doesn't start till October, so there's not really a whole lot. And like I said, in the southern hemisphere, it was actually lower. And part of the reason there's two reasons why the flu may not be as high as it normally is. One reason is that wearing masks and limiting social distancing
mm-hmm.
will have the same effect on flu as it does on COVID. So if more people are limiting their exposure, it's harder for the flu virus to spread. And I've said this before, and Trump has actually said it now, at least on tape, that COVID transmits more easily than flu. So, you know, if masks and social distancing can slow down COVID, they can certainly slow down flu. And then the other reason flu might be lower is because there is not just antibodies directed against that particular immunogen. There's broader antiviral type responses like interferon. Interferon was named interferon because it interferes with RNA viruses. And influenza and COVID are both RNA viruses. So if there's interferon that's been induced by a COVID infection, that interferon will not only help defeat COVID, it'll also help prevent flu from spreading. And so flu has those two obstacles. They've got COVID competition, and they've got host responses to COVID as far as biologicals are concerned. And then they got host responses in the sense that they're not interacting as much and they're wearing masks. But that's got limitations, and you know the more remarkable one was Trump held a rally indoors where I don't know, maybe 1,000 people there. I'm not sure how many people were there, but they were indoors. They were shoulder to shoulder. The only one wearing masks were the ones in the stands behind Trump. So they required them to wear masks if they were going to sit close to Trump. The rest mm-hmm. of the crowd, which is, you know, 95% of the people that were there, virtually none were wearing masks, and they were shoulder to shoulder. And Trump's excuse for holding it indoors was it was illegal to hold it outdoors with groups of more than 50, and so he couldn't get a venue because all the venues said, well, you know, you want to hold a rally, you're going to have more than 50 there. That, you know, there's a state law against doing that. So he couldn't get a permit to hold the rally, and ended up having somebody offered their facility, their manufacturing facility, I guess, or something. Anyway, they ended up with a big room indoors with, you know, maybe several thousand people shoulder to shoulder. So those types of events are not going to be good for controlling the virus. And the kids going back to school aren't going to be. Pennsylvania got above 1,000 cases again today. And again, it's because the virus is starting to spread. spread in the university. And then the final thing about California was I said, well, we want to partner with the conservation, but, you know, keep in mind that this isn't just something that's going to be done with conservation. There's climate change, and that's why the temperatures are so high, and that's why they're having these major weather-related events. And Trump said, oh, it'll get cooler. So just like the virus is going to go away, global warming is going to just go away on its own. It's going to get cooler because Professor Trump, he's a scientist as well as a doctor.
Part-time.
He's made it. Yeah, he probably is on a par with Paul Alexander. I guess he covers the U.S. and Paul Alexander covers Canada. Actually, he's doing a good job in Canada. Canada had zero cases a couple days ago in the entire country. But anyway, that's the latest. There'll be a kind of a full report tomorrow to see how bad the virus is in the U.S. And believe me, the U.S. number one position in the world is not threatened by Europe, even with a second wave, at least initially. So we'll see what happens. But
all right.
There'll be quite
very
a bit. And I don't know, as long as the shadows don't scare
you got me scared
now. Caputo,
I'm leaving the light on all night.
You'll probably have another story tomorrow. Okay.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks, care. Henry. Yeah. All right. Shadows on the wall. Okay. Back with you tomorrow night. Thanks for being here. Take good care and prepare.